Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie. I feel like I'm starting to sound like a radio host. I'm Katie.
And I'm Katie. Remember that time when I said it for you?
I was so confused as to what was happening. That was my favorite.
Because when you say it, I'm like saying it in my head with you because I love how you say it. And I just blurted it out for you.
We just have like a rhythm to the way that we do our intro now at this point, which is really nice because when we first started, we did not have that.
Oh, it was so awkward.
I know. Which somehow we still do manage to make it awkward. Props to us. That's an incredible talent of ours.
Never,
we're good at two
never
things.
Never not awkward. Never not awkward.
But there is still a nice rhythm, which is rare for us as we are white. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I just lost my car keys for like 2 hours. I am in a weird mood.
This is going to be a great episode.
This is going to be a fucking episode. But before we get into that, Ashley, what have you been doing this week?
What have I been doing this week? Do you ever try to think about it and then literally every thought goes out of your brain?
Oh, yeah. There's this like rule of like science or physics, sort of same thing. Where it's like the idea that when something is directly observed, it will change. And I saw a post on Tumblr that was talking about that. And it said, yes, proving that that rule is real. When I am directly observed, I change into a moron. The second anyone asks me anything about myself, I'm just like,
that's not where I thought you were going with that, but that's so funny.
When someone puts me on the spot, can't do it.
Yeah, can't do it. Like when somebody asks you your favorite song, I have forgotten every song name ever.
I don't think I've ever heard a song in my life, actually, now that you ask.
Anyway, during this banter, I remembered. So last weekend, we had a community cleanup event in my town, which is always great, helping the environment. It was really fun. It was a beautiful, beautiful day. It was like a perfect weather, clear skies with like a little bit of puffy clouds. It was great. Everything went well. We had a ton of volunteers. I helped at the check-in booth. It was really great. I can't wait to do it again.
That's awesome, dude.
I have to find out if there's more throughout the year because it feels like this specific event was like an annual thing. I would love to start doing more of that in the community, especially after all the flooding we had from Ida. There is stuff everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
From the overflow of the river. It's a really awesome event, and I got to meet new people in town. And then this weekend, we are hosting a food drive in front of the library in town. I know that there are listeners in Manville because we can see you on our analytics, so...
We see you.
If you're listening and you hear this, it's not coming out until Sunday, so never mind. But
if
Manville
you hear
resident...
this, travel back into the past.
In time,
hang out with Ashley on Saturday.
Saturday. So from 10 to 1, we're doing that. And I'm really excited. The donations that we get are going to go to the Manville Food Pantry and the Franklin Food Bank, who has been really, Franklin Food Bank has been really helpful as far as giving donations to the Manville Relief Center. And that's my running mate. She has been running that ever since Hurricane Ida, and usually gets about 15 to 25 families who show up for the food bank. And it's just really, really nice to be able to help the community. So I'm super excited for this food drive, and I really do hope that we get a lot of donations.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Dude, that's so awesome.
Anyway, Manville residents, start following my Instagram so that you know when we're doing more food drives and community events.
Yes, definitely. I also just realized that we like ended off the last episode by saying that we were recording this one together. That did not happen.
That did not happen. Oh, and last episode, we were telling everybody about how I was going to see you for your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That also didn't happen. Thank you, COVID.
Thanks, fucking sarcasm.
COVID. Yeah, thanks, fucking COVID. Neither of us had COVID.
Yeah, for we were good. I tested negative throughout the whole thing. Gabe had COVID, and he was like pretty okay for most of it, which is lucky for him, but I think that made it harder for him to be in quarantine, you know what I mean? Like, just like feeling fine, and he's like, so what do you mean I can't fucking do anything? I feel fine.
Aw, poor Gabe.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to, Katie?
Other than being driven crazy by my cat. Sorry, they just had a small piece of plastic and I could hear it. Working. My birthday was really fun. It was really chill. Obviously had to keep it very low key because Gabe had COVID.
I was so sad that I wasn't there with you. I know.
We'll reschedule. We'll do something. We'll see each other soon. What have I been doing?
It's gonna happen.
Just like hanging out with my dogs, gardening. Obsessively. Oh my god.
You're gardening is like incredible right now. Thank you. Please, no.
Oh my god.
You need to like talk this up because you have your own little farm in the backyard and I'm so jealous.
Truly. So about a couple months ago at this point.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a while.
I started a bunch of seedlings for vegetables and various types of flowers, and slowly but surely they were taking over my entire room as they all continued to sprout. and I was so excited because I did not expect as many of them to sprout as they did. So now, for the most part, it's a little overwhelming. I was a little overwhelmed for a while. For the most part now, most of the ones that can be outside are outside, which has cleared up my room and my desk. I'm actually at my desk for the first time in a while.
And the cats can no longer attack your sunflowers.
Oh my god, just wreaking havoc on my gardens. Like the little terrors that they are. They're both just staring at me right now. Like, you talking about me, bitch? Oh, here comes
Pete. Yeah, we are.
Yep, I was talking about you, and here he comes.
Retaliation!
Oh, yep, here he is.
Get in the Zoom frame, Pete. I need to see you. Little baby. He's precious.
He's so precious. He also knocked over a can of soda on his way over to see me. So thanks for that, Pete.
Is that the can Mike just brought you?
No.
Oh, thank God.
I'd be so much more angry.
It's devastating.
So yeah, I really would have been. So my garden is going really well. The other thing is I'm just like obsessively checking our ratings and reviews to see. We're up to 14 ratings, which is really exciting.
Nice. Because that is.
A couple weeks ago, it was like 10. So
all 5 stars?
They're all 5 stars.
Yes, dude.
I know. I was really excited.
I love that so much. Every time I see that we have a new, like, star rating, I get so, so excited that somebody chose 5 stars. Like,
right?
It means so much.
It's, like, truly the validation that I need when my depression has dark days. So if you ever have any time, it's, like, really, really quick. If you could just rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, it's the best way for small podcasts, like independent podcasts like ours, to gain traction within the Apple podcast space that is really overrun by a lot of podcasts that have some pretty deep pockets that we do not.
Yep.
So a rate and review would be so great if you guys could do that.
We would very much appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anything else?
No, I was talking to Mike the other day. I think in total I've put about 24 hours of research into this topic specifically. Shit. So I think that's why I'm having such a hard time answering like what I've been doing, because this.
Because it's been this. A true deep dive.
It's, and I'm so ready to just like word vomit it all out and then like kind of be a little bit done with it for a little bit. At least with well, what then. We're talking about today.
Okay. Well, why don't we get into it then?
I think it's time. I need to get it off. I need to talk about it.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, guys, y'all, friends. Sorry, I use the word guys all the time, and I'm trying to get it out of my vernacular.
Folks.
Folks, yes. All right, folks. So last week we did MK Ultra, kind of the background information. So I would definitely recommend listening to that before listening to this one. I did, however, I did try to do this in such a way where if someone just wanted to hear about just the sub projects of MKUltra, that they could kind of listen to this and still follow along and still like get information out of it. But you're really missing out if you don't listen to part one, because it explains a lot. You're going to have some questions if you just listen to this one, like what the fuck and how could they?
It's the origin story. You gotta check it out.
Oh my god, it truly is like the villain origin story of MK Ultra. Fuck, why didn't we think of that? That was the name.
Oh, I mean, we could still change it.
Maybe we will.
It's pretty easy to do.
I know. Okay. So just a small refresher, not me going to go change it right now. I'm just kidding. Small refresher. As we saw in part one, the temperature of the world wasn't super awesome. My notes. Oi. Okay. So it's around the end of 1952, beginning of 1953. It's just about under a decade since World War II ended. Citizens of the world are still emotionally and physically reeling from World War II. The Cold War between the U.S. and Soviet Russia is in full force. And it's partially just a Cold War because people are still reeling from World War II. Like, yeah. That just happened. So neither country wants to start anywhere near a battle. So we're just, you know, throwing shade at each other for decades. The CIA is about 6 years old. It literally never did. And it has an absurd amount of power. And I wanted to include that because the CIA right now is literally acting like a 6-year-old with unchecked power. And that's what they are. They're already conducting horrible experiments. Bluebird experimenting on prisoners in a secret CIA prison in Germany and Japan. And artichoke, which is similar to that, but more focused on drugs. After being hired, a scientist named Sidney Gottlieb centralizes to focus on drugs and other various abilities the CIA could gain from using drugs. Then him and his senior co-worker at the CIA, Richard Helms, propose to the now head of the CIA, Alan Dulles, quote, experiments of such an ultra-sensitive nature that they cannot and should not be handled by means of contracts, which would associate the CIA or the government with the work in question. Meaning the proposal off the bat is like, we're going to do shit so bad and so fucked up that no one can ever connect the CIA or the US government to them, which like should just throw up a million red flags.
The largest red flag.
The largest one you can think of. So I just want to note here that the information we, like, as a country and as a world do have on MKUltra is incredibly limited in the scope of everything that happened. Because, spoiler alert, on January of 1973, the only 7 boxes of documents on MKUltra that existed were stored in the National Archives, and they were destroyed, which we will get to. Of course, feel free to ask questions, and if I can answer them, I will.
Okay.
But if I can't, it's probably because of the limited information that we have.
None of that is shocking to me.
No. Of course it was fucking destroyed. But it's like, it's weird to say, like, looking at my 13 pages of notes on the sub-projects we do know about, it's weird to say the knowledge that we have is limited because we're about to do a whole episode. People have done whole podcasts on the knowledge we have on MKUltra. So I just want to, like, point out that it's so much bigger and so much worse. This is just what we do know.
Lay it on me.
Oh, okay. Gotta take a sip of my Dr. Pepper with cream soda. Dr. Pepper sponsor us.
That shit is amazing.
Literally the best.
I had never had it before I went to your house.
It's so fucking good, dude. It's so good. Okay, MKUltra. As we talked about last week, MKUltra is the umbrella name that holds hundreds of sub-projects. All of them are set up and under the control of Sidney Gottlieb, so he's the person we're mainly going to be following. The way that Gottlieb went about setting up all these projects is really interesting and weird. So I tried to organize these the best that I could. The numbers for the subproject numbering is out of control. And I think they're numbered weirdly on purpose. They're not in, like, chronological order.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. That checks out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's on purpose. So the first thing he needed to do before he could experiment with drugs, obviously, was pick up some more drugs. So securing more LSD was subproject 6. Intelligence reports that were false, by the way, come in saying that Russia was looking into buying LSD from Sandoz, the Swiss company that Albert Hofmann, that we talked about in the last episode, worked for. In 1953, Dulles approved the spending of $240,000 to buy all of the LSD that Sandoz had, which, for the record, is $2.5 million in today's money.
Holy shit!
Whoa. Yeah, that's so much money.
That is so much LSD.
What? Yeah. So here's the thing. It gets interesting. So they thought that Sandoz had 10 kilograms, which would be so much LSD. But somehow the agent that they sent over mistook, like, grams and kilograms. And what actually was the truth was that Sandoz had made 40 grams of it total, and there was only 10 left.
Okay.
So we paid $2.5 million in today's money for what we thought was 10 kilograms of LSD. And it was 10 grams. So Sandoz also threw in a deal not to, like, make or sell any LSD or any LSD knowledge to the Soviets. Okay. And this is a quote from Stephen Kinzer's
book. I mean, I feel
book.
Like we really paid for that deal.
We definitely did. We definitely did. But this quote kind of puts it into perspective a little bit. Sandoz was happy to cooperate. It did so not out of sympathy for CIA mind control projects, about which it knew nothing, but to rid itself of its, quote, problem child. A CIA officer who was sent to Sandoz reported that Sandoz was, quote, sorry they had ever discovered this material, since it had been the source of so many headaches and bother.
That's a weird way to put it, but also, like, I think after getting involved in something like that, because you kind of have to, because the CIA has no limits, I think I would also be upset with myself for creating this.
Well, this is just a Swiss company that thought that they were going to, like, you know, help with, like, blood flow. Is, you know, what they were looking into when LSD was discovered. And a bunch of their scientists just started experimenting with LSD. And they were probably like, guys, guys, please stop. This is not what we're doing. And please then all of these
stop dosing
other
yourselves.
Governments started bothering them about this drug that they were, like, trying to get their scientists to stop taking. So they're probably just like, yes, fucking get rid of this thing. We're so done with this. So then Gottlieb took the like some of the LSD and started paying U.S. pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly to figure out how to make more. And Eli Lilly, like, to this day is still, like, the top pharmaceutical, like, big pharma.
I just watched a TikTok today that was discussing that company.
Yeah,
I was like, damn, I know that name.
Yeah, they're a big fucking pharma still right now. So now that Gottlieb had people working on how to produce more LSD, he began laying out the foundation for the rest of his plans. This is where Gottlieb's right-hand man, George, comes in. Full name, George Hunter White. A little background on him. He was a crime reporter in San Francisco. He worked for the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. He was part of the OSS during World War II, where he was helping... God damn it, cats. He was part of the OSS during World War II, where he was helping them with truth serum experiments and was, like, feeding prisoners drugs. So he's, you know, kind of the perfect dude for this.
He's got some loose morals.
Clearly. And also, you know, is... Yeah, loose morals. There's no other funnier way to say that. I tried. I couldn't do it.
Thank you.
So he met with Gottlieb in Washington of 1952. And after a year of delays and clearances, he's finally cleared to work for the CIA. His whole thing was opening up the first, quote, safe house in New York City. The Bedford Street safe house was literally anything but safe. The initial payment was $3,400, which is, do you want to guess how much money today?
I'm bad at numbers. Just hit me with it.
$36,000.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Was used as a deposit.
Wow.
So now we're
money
at...
Money well spent.
Yeah, we're at like over we're close to like $3 million, honestly, at this point, in today's money on MKUltra so far. So the safe house, quote, was made up of two adjoining apartments. One was filled with surveillance equipment, microphones, so that people in one apartment could watch and record what was happening in the other.
Okay.
According to Kinzer, again, Stephen Kinzer, who wrote Poisoner in Chief, listen to part one. The Bedford Street complex in the heart of New York, to which unsuspecting citizens would be lured and surreptitiously drugged with the goal of finding ways to fight communism.
Like, are they just snatching people off the street?
They're literally just luring people from bars, like, hey, do you want to come to this party with me and my friends? And just drugging people and watching them.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That is insane.
I know.
Damn, really? Our tax dollars went to this bullshit?
Went to this, dude. And the reason we have this information is because George's widow donated his journals after he died, and they had a ton of details and dates and some commentary on what was being done in this apartment.
That must be a fascinating read.
Oh my god. I really want to find it and read it, like, in its entirety. So, under the false identity of Mason Hall, White would lure literally anyone he could to the apartment to dose with LSD and other drugs. Occasionally they knew and just wanted to experiment, but more often than not, they didn't know.
White, wow, just out here fucking dosing people against their will.
Oh, yeah, to stop communism, duh. White truly had no limits. Not only was he doing all of the drugs that they were sent, but he would dose literally everyone, his close friends included.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Quote, other victims included a young woman who had the misfortune to cross his path. Oh, wait, hold on. That's not it.
I mean, now I want to know about that.
Oh, I didn't include the quote about, right. Okay, so I didn't include the direct quote about his friends being dosed because all of the way that they were presented were speaking pretty poorly about this sex worker who was like a very proud lesbian and did like sex work and stuff. And I just didn't like the way that the quotes were talking about her because, you know, she was a lesbian in the 50s. So I didn't want to include any direct quotes.
That is very understandable.
But yeah, he was like dosing his friends. And at one point in time, they literally talk about how they didn't realize what he was doing was so horrible, but it really was.
How big of a dosage?
That this dude who's not a scientist whatsoever is giving them? Yeah, excellent question. To finish this quote. Because,
like, you can fuck people up.
Yeah, you really can. And we'll see some of that in the rest of these sub-projects. Other victims included young women who had the misfortune to cross his path. His diary suggests how they reacted. Gloria gets horror. Janet gets sky high. White, sufficiently impressed with the power of LSD, began to call it Stormy in his diary entries.
I just need a second. Just pause for a moment because.
Yep.
Horror.
Gloria gets horror.
Gloria's having a really bad fucking trip.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just jotting down notes about it. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And it's not even. It's the fact that he used the word horror for me. There's just something about that that's so sinister because.
Yeah.
The person who you just dosed, like, cannot control what they are seeing, what they are experiencing, and it's must be fucking terrifying if that's the word that you're using.
Well, and there's no explanation for it. It's 1953. It's not like these sort of drugs. It's not like the LSD subculture has happened in the world. People have no fucking idea what's going on to them. LSD was just invented and had not come to the United States whatsoever. No one in the United States have heard of LSD. So if this just starts happening to you all of a sudden, horror. And no explanation, terrifying. God, terrifying.
That's so scary. Please continue. I just like was really stuck on that word.
That's why I included the quote, was that specific part right there. Nonetheless, he continued giving it to anyone he could lure into his den. Oh, here we go. I was angry at George, a friend of White's who he had dosed, who ran the Vixen Press. Okay, yeah, I tried to edit the quote as much as possible. Who ran the Vixen Press said years later, it turned out to be a bad thing to do to people, but we didn't realize it at the time.
When he says that, we didn't realize it at the time, I'm sorry, was he helping?
That was his friend, the lesbian friend, sex worker, who was saying, like, it turned out the drug he was giving to people was bad, but we didn't know. Because they were also taking it voluntarily as well.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Due to his past connections of working with the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and the CIA support behind what he was doing, White was untouchable. A victim of one of his experiments, this is a quote, staggered into Lenox Hill Hospital afterward, claiming that she had been drugged. After a couple hours, she was told that she was probably mistaken and quietly discharged. Episodes like this were kept quiet because the CIA had, as one account put it, arranged an accommodation with the Medical Department of New York City Police Department to protect White from any hassles.
What?
Yep.
Oh. My God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
White continued to run these experiments in New York City for 2 years. Genuinely, no one knows who or exactly how many people were there or drugged or with what. All of that information died with White.
Oh, my God. That is absolutely insane.
It just gets worse from here on out. Like, this is actually an order of, like, how bad I think it is.
Okay.
And then I end it with something that was, like, truly the lightest thing that I could find in all of this. I tried to end on a light note.
I'm sure it's not even that light.
If you squint, maybe.
Oh, my God. All right.
Okay.
Let's keep going. This is a wild ride.
Oh, yeah. We're on page 3. Now we need to get into some of the other really bad ones. James Hamilton, renowned Stanford psychiatrist. His first assignment, Subproject 2, was to study the possible synergistic action of drugs, which may be appropriate for use in abolishing consciousness.
What a phrase. Abolishing consciousness.
So the idea behind
this. Tell me what that means. Yeah.
Is that in order to control someone's mind, we have to delete what exists already. Find me a drug that will do that.
Okay, I'm going to need you to watch the new season of the new Hardy Boys show because there's something similar to that in it.
Interesting. Oh, that's all interesting. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And also look into methods to enable the administration of drugs to patients without their knowledge. Subproject 121 was to test whether inhaling carbon dioxide could lead people into a trance-like state. Subproject 140, conducted at St. Francis Hospital in San Francisco under the cover of thyroid research, was to measure the possible psychoactive effects of thyroid-related hormones. By one account, Hamilton was, quote, one of the Renaissance men of the programs, working on everything from psychochemicals to kinky sex to carbon dioxide inhalation.
Such a wide spectrum there.
Truly. I couldn't find anything about the kinky sex, but that quote was in the book, so I had to include it.
I'm like, that part I want to know about.
So much. I want to know so much more about that. Robert Hyde at the Boston Psychopathic Institute, which, don't worry, has now been renamed to the Massachusetts Center for Mental Health.
Wow.
Yeah, what a change, right?
Yeah.
Although, honestly, after this, kind of surprised it's still open. Subproject 8, Hyde conducted a, quote, study of the biochemical, neurophysiological, sociological, and clinical psychiatric aspects of LSD. So just looking into LSD as a whole. Testing and evaluating the effects of LSD and alcohol administered to individuals falling under various personality categories. Don't necessarily know what that means. Subproject 63 was studying, quote, the use of alcohol as a social phenomenon. What does that even fucking mean?
We're just gonna study people as they drink.
Do you like them?
What?
We're just going to watch people get lit, see what happens. With particular emphasis on those variables.
That's kind of what this entire thing feels like.
Oh, yeah. Emphasis on those variables that would prove predictive in the assessment and possible manipulation of human behavior. So trying to see, like, what connecting things between people might make someone more easy to control.
Okay.
Hundreds of students from Harvard, Emerson, and MIT were unwittingly assisting the agency's research into the possibility of mind control. Each was paid $15 to drink a little vial of clear, colorless, and odorous liquid that might produce, quote, an altered state. They were not told any details about the drug they would be ingesting.
How much were they paying?
$15.
Back then? $15 or $15 an hour? Just $15 every just time they drank bucks. Something?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a lot.
No. 15 an hour, that'd be progressive. As one study later concluded, none of those involved in the experiments had the proper training or understanding to guide the participants. None of them had done LSD before. They didn't know how to babysit people.
Oh my God.
Several had negative reactions. One died by suicide in the clinic bathroom.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it made it funny for a little bit, and then, sorry, brought you back to MKUltra, people die. Carl Pfeiffer, chairman of the Department of Pharmacology at Emory University. I just want to point out, like, how many reputable universities and well-known doctors are doing this fucked up shit.
But are we surprised?
No. Not surprised. Just wanted to highlight it.
Oh, yeah.
4 sub-projects total with Carl Pfeiffer. All involving, direct quote, normal and schizophrenic people. Let that sink in.
What is normal?
1950s normal? I don't want to fuck. White?
Facts.
As subjects, this is a quote. Oh, this is not going to be good. Okay. When it's highlighted in pink, I know it's a quote and I know it's going to be really bad.
Oh, God.
As subjects, Pfeiffer used inmates at the federal prison in Atlanta and at the juvenile detention center in Bordentown, New Jersey.
Come on.
Under subprojects 9 and 26, he studied the ways that various depressant drugs can shake a person's psyche by either altering his metabolism or producing sedation. His assignments under subproject 28 was to test depressants which affect the central nervous system. Most intriguingly, under subproject 47, he would screen and evaluate hallucinogenic materials of interest to technical services. The juvenile detention center is really...
How young does it say?
No.
Oh, God. Jesus.
Okay. We're almost done with Carl. We're almost done with Pfeiffer. We're almost done with him.
Okay.
And then we can all take a brief pause while I emotionally vomit. One of his subjects was James Whitey Bulger, a Boston gangster who was sentenced to life for crimes, including 11 murders.
As I say, definitely have heard that name before.
Oh, very well known. Very well known gangster. He was given LSD nearly every day for 15 months.
Oh, fuck.
And he described Dr. Pfeiffer as a modern-day Dr. Mengele, who was a Nazi scientist who disappeared after the Nazis surrendered and worked directly with Kurt Blom and some of the people mm-hmm. that we talked about in episode 1. The fact that these experiments are being compared to Nazi science experiments is like pretty accurate when these are based off of experiments created by literal Nazis.
Yep. This is insanity.
The other thing is that they were told that they were looking for the cure for schizophrenia and they were just being shot
That's
up
a lie.
With LSD. Yeah. So That's he described
definitely not going to help someone with schizophrenia.
He described hours of paranoia and feeling violent, horrible periods of living nightmares and blood coming out of the walls, guys Whoa. Turning to skeletons in front of me. Quote, the men in suits would be in a room and hook me up to machines asking questions like, did you ever kill anyone? Would you kill someone? Two men went psychotic. They all had the symptoms of schizophrenia. They had to be pried loose from under their beds, growling, barking, and frothing at the mouth. They put them in a strip cell down the hall. I never saw or heard from them ever again. They told us we were helping find a way for schizophrenia. When it was all over, everyone would feel suicidal and depressed, wrung out emotionally. Time would stand still. I tried to quit, but Dr. Pfeiffer would appeal to me. Please, you're my best subject, and we're so close to finding the cure.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Sentenced to life for 11 murders or not, no one should experience that.
No.
No one.
Dear Lord.
I just, like, I can't imagine being told that, like, you're in a study for finding the cure for schizophrenia, which Whitey Bulger was schizophrenic. And, you know, I remember him talking about how, you know, there were times where he was like, I'm sentenced to life in jail. I may as well do something with this. And if finding the cure to schizophrenia, this like a horrible thing that he was suffering from, could be of use to people, like, then you may as well. And then this fucking happens to him.
Like, he really genuinely thought that he maybe was going to be able to be cured and help other people in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that's so honorable about that as a man who is in prison because he's a mob boss.
Yeah. Because he's murdered 11 people. You know, he's been like, I've been suffering from this thing. I did horrible stuff. Maybe I can help someone. And he's given LSD almost every day for 15 months.
What the fuck? Like, honestly, if you don't have schizophrenia to begin with, that's just going to make you.
Absolutely.
Be seeing some shit.
Absolutely.
That is going to fuck you up.
Okay. So, I'm so sorry. Remember how I said it just keeps worse with every one we go on?
Yeah.
So, this is the Addiction Research Center in Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, fuck.
Run by a man named Harris Isbell, who was the director of research. Officially, this place was a hospital, but everything that I've read has said that it functions more like a prison. Isbell reached out himself to the CIA about wanting to test with LSD. So they didn't even have to search him out. He was like, yes, 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 please.
I wish that people could see my face right now, but like, I don't like that.
Not good. Not good.
I definitely don't like that.
And
not a good person.
Because of this enthusiasm, Gottlieb agreed to give him LSD and, quote, whatever funds were necessary. Don't like that.
Don't like that?
I really hate that. All right, here's another quote from Kinzer. Most inmates were African Americans from the margins of society. They were unlikely to complain if abused. I want to pause that quote. They are unlikely to be listened to.
Yeah.
If complained.
That's really what it should be.
Is what it should say. Back to the quote. That made them fine subjects for clandestine drug experiments. Isbell's MK Ultra subcontracts contracts included subproject 73 to test whether LSD, mescaline, or other drugs could make users more susceptible to hypnosis. Subproject 91 was to perform preclinical pharmacology studies required to develop new psychochemicals. And subproject 147 was to study psychotomimetric drugs, a class that produces delusions and delirium. So Jesus. He just kind of had a lot of free range Which the thing that interests me most, like the thing that I find like most sinister, interests me most is a bad way of phrasing it, was to develop new psychochemicals, which seems to me like he's going to be trying to take LSD, mescaline, and the other things that make people susceptible to hypnosis.
Like put them together.
To put them together to make a new psychochemical.
That is absolutely insane.
Some Marvel villain shit.
It truly is.
All of this is some Marvel villain
shit. It's giving me like... it's giving me like first couple of seasons of Arrow vibes.
Yes, yeah. Dude. Like, is this what they used on Bucky Barnes?
This is absolutely insane.
Okay.
Unhinged.
This part, I'm sorry, I just like had to pause because I read this sentence and was like, this made me think so many things. In hundreds of his articles written, he wrote and published hundreds of articles about this, about doing these things to people.
Oh, and my God.
In them, he called them volunteers.
That is the farthest thing from the truth. What? Oh, no, this is totally okay because they're volunteering. They have no choice.
They have no choice.
There is no choice there. You do not give them a decision to make. They are
They're forced into this. This is the Addiction Research Center. This is drug addicts.
And you said that from everything that you've read, it functions more like a prison instead of a hospital.
Yes.
Absolutely insane. There's no choice there.
Let me read this quote about these volunteers. They were not told what sort of drug they'd be fed or what its effects might be. To attract them, Isbell offered rewards at the Addiction Research Center, including doses of high-grade heroin, to feed the habit he was supposedly helping them break. One of his articles,
Addiction Center,
refers to a volunteer who, quote, felt that he would die or would become permanently insane after being given 180 micrograms of LSD. He begged not to be dosed again and required, quote, considerable persuasion before agreeing to continue. That does not sound like a fucking volunteer to me.
You gaslit. It's gaslighting and manipulation.
You offered addicts high-grade heroin to play with their consciousness.
He changed his mind and said that he didn't want to do it anymore.
And then
immediately
persuaded him.
Consent, whatever weird consent that was, taken away. And then you persuaded him. You manipulated, this is a much better word, you manipulated him into continuing something that was scaring the shit out of him.
Yeah.
What?
So, 5 black men were a part of that study where they, quote, agreed to take the drug chronically. After a month, Isbell increased the LSD dosage up to 300 micrograms a day. God.
Oh, my God.
Remember the quote where I just said that one of his articles refers to someone feeling like he would die or become permanently insane after 180 micrograms?
Yeah, I definitely remember that.
He's now giving 5 people 300 a day.
Jesus. I mean, these are the worst of the worst kind of human beings.
There was another test where Isbell gave 7 prisoners LSD for 42 days and isolated them.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
After 42 days, he doubled, then tripled, then quadrupled the doses. And this entire thing continued for 77 days.
Wow. Like I said, these people are truly the scum of the earth. Horrible human beings who are doing horrible things to other people.
A 19-year-old subject recalled one of the experiments. It was the worst shit I'd ever had. His name was Eddie Flowers. Flowers suffered through hours of overwhelming hallucinations, all because he wanted the dose of heroin that Isbell offered as payment. They're literally in rehab.
How are you going to say they're a volunteer when they're in rehab and then you offer them the thing that they're in rehab for?
And
to coerce them into doing this.
And like doctor grade heroin. Not just like some dude.
Street heroin.
Yeah. Like this is the best heroin that they probably will ever be able to find. If they were, oh God, it truly.
Addiction is a disease and you were literally feeding the disease. There was no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. Jesus.
Okay.
And then when they took consent away, you goaded them into it more. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, okay. Let's take one step darker. Harold Abramson, a New York physician. In 1953, he was given $85,000, which is just under $1 million today.
A million. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, $1 million.
$1 million.
And his goals were, quote, to conduct experiments with LSD and other hallucinogenics in search of drugs along the following lines. A, disturbance of memory. B, discrediting by abhorrent behavior. They're looking for a drug that makes you look so crazy no one will believe you. That's fucked up. C, alteration of sex patterns. D, eliciting of information. E, suggestibility. F, creations of dependence. Horrible. Like, that's what he's, like, looking for.
My God.
So they're like, test all these drugs and find us drugs that will do these things. There's also another list, and I couldn't find the subprojects that they were linked to. But there's another list where it's just like, look for a knockout pill, look for a pill that's going to stress someone out, look for a pill that's going to make it impossible for someone to stress out. Just like a drug, they want to control every aspect of human nature and they wanted a drug for everything.
Okay.
So back to Harold Abramson in New York. He monitored the experiment of 12 prepubescent boys who were fed psilocybin.
Oh, where did this happen in New York?
New York City. Another where 14 kids between 6 and 11, diagnosed as schizophrenic, were given 100 micrograms of LSD for every day for 6 weeks. Where are those kids? Where the fuck are those kids right now?
Whoa.
100 micrograms of LSD every day for 6 weeks. 6 to 11.
Oh, God.
Imagine. Like, literal fucking children. He was also, like, just hosting parties at his house in Long Island and just, like, giving LSD to doctors to sample themselves and, like, giving LSD to his party guests. Which, like, they all knew that it was happening, but they were just, he was just like, fucking parties! And while all of this was going on, Gottlieb himself was doing LSD, which I feel like is pretty clear if you look at his behavior.
I was gonna say, I feel like any person who's in their right mind is not going to be doing all of this.
Is not like, so, here's $1 million. I want you to test some drugs on these kids. No, you're not in your right mind, sir.
Wow.
It's fucking insane. So he himself is also hosting retreats where people working in connection to MKUltra or like other scientists, people working at Camp Dietrich were invited to and dosed secretly with LSD. Imagine your boss just dosing you with fucking LSD.
You? Jesus fucking Christ.
So it's November 18th, 1953. It is November. This shit started in like April. It has been 7 months. 7 fucking months. A retreat cabin on Deep Creek Lake in Maryland. A man named Frank Olson, who had been working at Camp Dietrich since it opened, was invited to one of these retreats with 8 other people. 4 CIA scientists from the technical service staff who work, that those are the people who work at Camp Dietrich, which also ran MKUltra, and 5 Army scientists from Special Operations Division of the Chemical Corp. It, like, genuinely does make sense for these two groups of nerds to come together and talk about their beakers.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's like, that fully makes fucking sense. And yeah. I bet that they would have had a goddamn blast had this not been hosted by Sydney Gottlieb.
Yeah. Because I am assuming you're going to tell us that they got hosted.
Oh, yeah. The first day of the retreat went great. Like, genuinely, like, it seemed like they were having a fucking blast. Thursday night, they all meet for dinner and drinks. And after 20 minutes, Gottlieb, like the fucking creep that he is, just looks up and is like, does anyone feel odd? Like, you're a fucking God. Weirdo.
What an asshole.
Right? And several of them were like, yeah. And that's when it was revealed their drinks were spiked with LSD.
The way that I would murder that man.
Olson was furious. We're talking about some of the scientists who have, like, made these chemicals knowing what they do to people.
And then being they're getting dosed with it.
Finding oh out God. That they were dosed.
The way that I would spin out. Yeah. I'd spin out.
Like, absolutely.
Everybody's having a bad trip.
Absolutely. The next morning, it's like, it's said in the book that the people the next morning barely looked any better than they did the night prior. Like, they're not doing good. Olson went home immediately. At dinner, he tells his wife that he made a terrible mistake. She kind of presses and like, what do you mean? What did you do? And he's like, I'll tell you once the kids are asleep. But he never did. Olson, the next few days, he's like having multiple conversations with his boss, Vincent Ruitt, about his performance, doubting his work, feeling like he wasn't doing well. He's sporadic. His boss says he's disoriented, all mixed up, and keeps talking about something that he's done wrong. Olson at this point has worked for Camp Dietrich for a decade. He's seen a lot of stuff, and he seems out of control, which is not good, because out of control, people spill secrets.
Loose lips sink ships.
Exactly. And the CIA is currently driving one of their largest, worst ships ever that he knows all about. He mentions to his wife.
I feel like Gottlieb really, really fucked up by dosing this man.
He mentioned to his wife that he wants to change his career. He's mentioned to a few of his friends that he wants out of the CIA. And then at one point, he even talks to his boss about how he should quit or be fired because of his poor performance. So his boss,
he's like, get me out of here.
Literally. Now. It seems like he wants fucking out. His boss, Vincent Ruitt, reports all of this to Gottlieb. Gottlieb is like, this guy needs to see a doctor. But because of everything that Olson knows. Is he going to see a doctor
or is he going to be dosed more?
Because of everything that Olson knows, he has to go to someone who has like the same security clearance that he does. But more importantly, it has to be someone that Gottlieb knows that he can trust. So Olson is taken to the physician most intimately tied with MKUltra, Harold Abramson, the man who's testing psilocybin on 6 to 11-year-olds.
Oh, God. This is not going to go well for him.
No. Per Gottlieb's orders, he's escorted there by his boss and Gottlieb's chemist deputy, Robert Lashbrook. Frank tells his wife that he's going to New York City to seek psychiatric care. While he's on his way there, he's mentioning feeling mixed up, fearing something was out to get him, expressing worry that he didn't want to eat because he was scared that the CIA was going to poison or drug his food. Fair.
Fair assumption, buddy.
So he went and saw Abramson, who, by the accounts of Abramson and the people there, Olson seemed to be reassured that things would get better. He wasn't sleeping.
I highly doubt that he was reassured.
Right? Especially because of the behavior that I'm about to describe after this. He wasn't sleeping very well, so he was given legitimately actual sleeping pills. It wasn't secretly LSD.
Wow.
I know.
Look at them actually being helpful for once.
Right?
The problem that they caused.
But even after he was, quote, reassured, Olson continued to act erratic, bolting out of rooms and, like, refusing to go see a Broadway show because he was scared that when he got there or, like, when it ended, he was going to be arrested. Thanksgiving morning, Ruitt woke up at 5 a.m. and Olsen wasn't in the room, but instead in the lobby, looking just super disheveled, and said that he had been wandering aimlessly through the city and that he had thrown his wallet away.
Okay, so he wasn't, like, locked up somewhere? He was just staying somewhere with them?
He was staying in a hotel in a room by himself. I think in a room with Ruitt, but, like, you know how sometimes they have, like, those hotels where it's, like, separate rooms and, like, a communal room?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of how I'm picturing that one. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, he had promised his wife that he was going to be home for Thanksgiving. And it was Thanksgiving morning when Ruitt woke up and Olsen had allegedly spent the night wandering the city.
Okay.
So they flew to Washington so that he could go home for Thanksgiving. But when they were about to go drive there, Olsen said that he felt ashamed to meet his family because he was just so out of it and mixed up, which I actually can imagine is somewhat fair, like having felt erratic in moments myself, being like, I don't need to be around my kids right now. Like,
yeah,
I'm not okay. And I don't want them to see me like this. Gottlieb met them and said that Olsen seemed very mentally disturbed at this time. He was talking in a clear manner, but his thoughts were confused. So they decided to go back to New York and meet with Abramson because whatever they did before, it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So they met with Abramson, and Olsen and everyone agreed that he should be hospitalized in Maryland at a sanatorium called Chestnut Lodge, which is not run by the CIA. Lashbrook, Olsen, and Ruitt left to go check into the Statler Hotel. Reports from Ruitt and Lashbrook say that Olsen seemed to be looking forward to the hospitalization stay, that he seemed relieved, and that, you know, up in spirits that things were going to get better. Now, at this point,
so amazing to me that being dosed once has him in such a crazy spiral.
Well, who knows?
And everything else that he's witnessed, you know?
I mean, his psyche, think about all of the stuff that he was a part of at Camp Dietrich that we talked about in the first episode. His psyche was obviously fragile. I mean, you're like working on torture with Nazis. That's not a mind frame I would suggest taking any acid on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like go into that with such a specific mind. Who also knows like what his mental health genetically was like. LSD is not something to be fucking with, especially, you know, government grade LSD, which has been described by people as like the purest, best LSD that they had ever used or experienced, and it fucked him up a lot. So at this point, Lashbrook and Olsen were staying like in one room with two beds, so they were watching TV and Olsen went to sleep. Just before dawn, Frank Olsen's body, only in underwear, hits the sidewalk. Alive for a little bit after impact, the night manager comforted him, saying later that he felt as though Olsen wanted to tell him something. Dude, I told you, it gets worse with each story. I don't know what you were expecting to top feeding children psilocybin. Like, it's so bad.
I really don't know. It's so bad.
Olsen had been staying in room 1018A, registered to him and Robert Lashbrook. When the police went up to the room, Lashbrook was in the bathroom, sitting, dressed, on the toilet with his head in his hands. This is his account.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Right?
That literally, dude. Be more suspicious.
I had been sleeping. I heard a noise, and then I woke up. I didn't go down there to check on him because I looked out the window. I saw him lying there. There were people running from the station. What could I have done? I could see that he had help. I thought it was best to wait here. The night manager later said about this conversation, I had never encountered a case where someone got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room in his underwear, avoiding two beds, to dive through a closed window with the shade down and curtains drawn. Very fucking suspicious.
I feel like he was definitely pushed.
The manager...
So, like, did he go through the glass? Or... Yeah. Yeah, bro.
the way. He was definitely pushed.
Yeah. So, kind of like operating on this hunch, he went down and asked the telephone operator in the lobby if any calls had been made from that room. And we're talking about a time where hotels were routed through switchboards. So they would have to pick up the phone. The, you know, lobby operator would be like, oh, who would you like to be connected to? They would tell him. Yeah. She would physically do it. And then they would be talking. The room had called a number on Long Island. Dr. Harold Abramson. And
not surprised.
The lobby telephone operator in the lobby had actually listened to the phone call as it was happening in the middle of the night. And that's suspicious. The caller said, well, he's gone. And Dr. Abramson replied, well, that's too bad.
Oh my God, I'm like tearing up.
Yeah.
They murdered this man.
A co-worker went to tell his family in Virginia, and his son recalls being told that Frank, quote, fell or jumped to his death. A choice of words he says he thinks about often.
Yeah, because they're like, nope, there's no other responsibility. Either it was an accident, or he purposely did this to himself.
Yeah.
Just completely ignoring the other fucking option that definitely happened.
Well, and it also wasn't until decades later that the CIA even admitted that 9 days before his death, they dosed him on the retreat. This whole thing happened in 9 days.
Whoa!
So, like, directly all related. All
they saw him as was a liability.
Absolutely.
A liability to be taken care of.
Absolutely. And like at this point in the book, they were talking about how there was like a CIA officer who wasn't involved in MKUltra, but you know, just like had CIA secrets, and something happened to him and he needed to go under anesthesia, and it was like a brain surgery, so he had to be awake for it. And while he was like going under, he was just like spewing CIA secrets. You know, that news kind of traveled around before Frank Olson died. And that really scared the shit out of everyone involved in MKUltra.
Oh my God.
Because they hadn't really planned for that. They had been working to try and find ways to protect their spies from mind control and stuff. But they hadn't been thinking about just regular anesthesia, about just like, you know. So that really scared them. And I think the idea, allegedly, of him being committed into a hospital freaked him out. A hospital that they didn't have control over.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, this is mind-blowing.
Okay. So this all kind of connects into some other stuff. Because up until this point... All right. Hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself. It's around 1954 when pharmaceutical companies cracked the code on how to make LSD. So Gottlieb spent $400,000 on more, which is $4,225,125 today. We're up to like $10 million currently.
Wow.
In today's money.
Absolutely insane.
With now just like an unlimited amount, essentially, of LSD, the massive amount of subprojects that Gottlieb like could ever want were all, anything he could ever want to use LSD for was suddenly possible. But for studies to be scientific, controlled experiments must take place. So we have, you know, we have these doctors doing their things, and those are somewhat controlled experiments, but like they're in prisons. That's not that, you know, like that's not the best environment to conduct accurate research out of. You know, we've got agents in this house being, or like, you know, people just drugging random people, but again, not necessarily a controlled environment. Subcontracts to establish medical centers and hospitals, like, was the answer. You know, just kind of getting more and more hospitals involved in on this. Because right now they had a decent amount, but it was really just like a select few doctors that were kind of under Gottlieb's crazy agenda.
They wanted whole hospitals.
Yeah, they wanted more. But the issue with getting more was that that kind of opens up the idea that more people could know that they're conducting experiments for the CIA. Yeah. And not just for them, they're working on mind control Like, it's a crazy thing. So they had to get, like, cutouts, like, front groups that would agree to take the CIA's money and funnel it to researchers.
Interesting.
So the De Sticker Fund for Medical Research and the Hosiah P. Macy Foundation were two philanthropic foundations that were, like, among the first two to, like, funnel money for the CIA.
Okay.
By the mid-1950s, all of these organizations, and this is where I made the map that I made on our Instagram. This is where this comes in. It's been
a hit on Instagram.
Many U.S. leading behavior psychologists were conducting research and didn't know it. Massachusetts General Hospital, the Worcester Foundation for Experimental Biology, Iona State Hospital, Mount Sinai, the universities of Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Denver, Illinois, Oklahoma, Rochester, Texas, and Indiana. Other universities including Harvard, Berkeley, City College of New York, Columbia, MIT, Stanford, Baylor, Emory, George Washington, Cornell, Florida State, Vanderbilt, that's basically all of the Ivies, John Hopkins, and Tulane. And medical schools at Wayne State University, Boston University, New York University, and the University of Maryland. Some of these drug experiments required risking the health of participants, like the one at the Walter E. Ferdinand School in Massachusetts, in which mentally handicapped children were fed cereal laced with uranium and radioactive calcium.
What? Uranium.
Yep. Uranium.
And cereal? Radioactive calcium?
Yep.
What? Yeah. What? Like, what does that even do to a person?
So all of the children apparently, allegedly, supposedly were fine. But my thing is they didn't know that they were going to be when they did that.
They just did it anyway.
Quote, mentally handicapped children is how it was said in the book. Like, you can't do that.
Holy balls, dude. You can't fucking do that. This is insane. You can't
fucking do that. So then that wasn't enough. So later in 1955, I hate it here so much. Gottlieb up with the idea of creating his own research foundation that would pose as an independent thing, but it would really just be a way for the CIA to launder MKUltra money to doctors and any other person with a science background that would do his test.
Oh my god!
So him and this man, Harold Wolf, from the Cornell Medical Center, came up with the fund. Wolf was so sure that drugs and sensory deprivation would wipe a brain clean and leave it opening for reprogramming. So he called that human ecology. And, like, that was, like, his whole fucking thing. And that's why him and Gottlieb kind of, like, worked together on this, because they're both like, yeah, we're going to fucking reprogram brains.
Good Lord.
So they created the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology. Like, right there in the fucking name. Just right there.
I know. I'm like, that's not very, like, low key.
No, not at all. This isn't, you know, at Operation all. Bluebird anymore. This is, like, right in the fucking name.
We're telling you what we're doing if you pay attention.
Yeah. One of the first sub-projects the Society commissioned was an intensive study on 100 Chinese refugees who were... Are you...
What did they knock over? That was a lot.
That was my change jar. Was that the gate?
Oh my god.
And the gate. No, they just knocked over a ton of shit. Okay. One of the first sub-projects the Society commissioned was an intensive study of 100 Chinese refugees who were lured to participate with the promise of fellowships, but were actually being tested to see if they could be programmed to return home and commit acts of sabotage.
Oh my god.
It's like literally refugees just trying to come over and, like, seek help. And the goal is that we're going to reprogram them and try and have them, like, go sabotage China.
Unhinged.
Yeah.
Absolutely unhinged.
So
the amount of innocent people who are suffering because of this is absolutely insane.
Absolutely insane. And we were talking about this the other day. No wonder there were so many fucking serial killers after this.
Oh, yeah!
Like,
we're talking about doctors at, like, renowned psychiatric hospitals drugging children. Like, yeah.
You know what's so... Have you ever played L.A. Noire?
No, I haven't.
Okay. There's the all these, like, cutscenes where... And this is, like, 1940s L.A. And there's, like, cutscenes of this doctor who gets war vets who are having, like, PTSD and everything. He starts, like, giving them morphine and, like, testing morphine on them and everything. And this, I'm like, they must have taken, like, some kind of inspiration from this.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. A lot of pop culture references this. Like, Stranger Things is a kind of combination of this and the Montauk and experiments. Montauk.
Yeah.
Okay. You and Cameron in... Oh, so the last thing about that is just that as MKUltra really hit its peak, this foundation is how he lured a bunch of scientists into these sub-projects, is that a lot of them didn't know that they were working for the CIA on mind control, and they genuinely just thought that they were doing, like, other stuff. Like, in some instances, they didn't know that they were giving people mescaline. It was just like, here, try this drug. It's for this.
You know, I feel like, as a scientist or as a doctor or something, why the fuck would you risk your career giving people something that you don't know what it is?
Because that's it's not insane. Necessarily your career, it's the foundation. You know, and they created these safety nets. So Ewan Cameron, in 1956, published papers talking about experiments of putting patients into small cells and then putting them into clinical comas using hypnosis and drugs, including LSD. Oh, God. It's this one. He then... Okay. He then subjected them to repetition of simple recorded phrases. This was happening in McGill. He was the chairman of the Department of Psychology, and he was both the
McGill, the university in Canada?
Yes.
Woo! That's where Becca went.
And Ewan Cameron was also the president of both the American and Canadian Psychiatric Associations. Whew. The people that he was experimenting on were people there for, like, relatively minor and common disorders. People were checked in for things like anxiety, family troubles, postpartum depression, very run-of-the-mill things.
Yeah.
He gave patients drugs that put them into semi-comatose states for periods ranging from 10 days to 3 months. To cleanse unwanted thoughts from a patient's mind, Cameron used a technique he called psychic driving, in which he administers electroconvulsive shocks that reached 30 to 40 times the strength other psychiatrists used. After days of this treatment, the patient was moved to a solitary ward. There, they were fed LSD and given only minimal amounts of food, water, and oxygen. Cameron fitted patients with helmets equipped with earphones, into which he piped phrases or messages like, "My mother hates me," repeated hundreds of thousands of times.
Whoa.
So it's like, it's literally Zoolander. When they take him and they put him in that helmet and they're like, "Kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia." But yeah, it's like, yeah. It's your mother hates you, kill yourself. Your mother hates you. Your mother hates you. Like that. It's not just like one thing after another. It'd be like really quiet and just like, and then it'd be silent for a little bit. And then it'd get really loud. Like, even just doing what I just did and hearing that back in my headphones gave me the chills.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm like,
I'm like very uncomfortable with what I just heard myself do. And you're
my jaw's on the floor.
You're in a fucking coma. You're fed LSD, you're given minimum amounts of oxygen, and you're wearing helmets equipped with earphones with messages being played through like that.
Like, you're gonna go fucking crazy.
So, In professional papers and lab reports, Cameron reported that he had succeeding in destroying mines, but he had not found a way to replace them with new ones.
Yeah, you definitely destroyed mines, bro.
Absolutely.
You ain't lying there.
So there was where he talks about how this like 19-year-old young woman was reduced to like being unable to speak. She needed diapers. She couldn't feed herself just after what he did to her. And he was like, fuck yeah, I broke her mind. Totally got rid of it.
Imagine going somewhere to get help for anxiety, postpartum depression, basic run-of-the-mill.
For family troubles.
And this happens.
Yeah. And you're put in a coma, you know, like it's not like your family can do anything about it. It's not like you can tell your family what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just any kind of bodily autonomy out the fucking window.
Yeah. So over several years, he was given around $69,000, which is hundreds of thousands of dollars in today's money. During this period, according to the historian Alfred McCoy, approximately 100 patients admitted to the Allen Institute with moderate emotional problems became unwitting or unwilling subjects in an extreme form of behavioral experimentation. One day in 1955, the CIA officer who was Gottlieb's liaison to Cameron wrote in his diary, "Dr. G made it clear my job was to ensure acceptable deniability operates at all times in Montreal." So he had a CIA officer there specifically dedicated so that no one would figure out there
what was happening,
what was going on, and that it was being connected to the CIA. The CIA had to have plausible deniability the entire time. Okay, we're almost done.
This is so much to unpack.
This is, I know, it's a lot. Okay. We're starting to get into the things where it's, this is, we can laugh at one part of this one, I guess is the way I'll say that. All right. It's called Operation Midnight Climax, and it's exactly what you think it is.
Oh, boy.
After 2 years of operating the safe house in New York, George Hunter White, remember him?
Uh-huh.
Was offered a promotion at the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in San Francisco. So, yeah, at this time, he had been literally, like, by day, like, locking up people for using drugs, then by night, like, dosing people with drugs.
Insanity! What?
I know. And we're, like, paying him to do
fucking
both.
Fucking hypocrisy of it. Like, come on.
Rather than losing White to this new job, Gottlieb decided to have him open up another, quote, safe house in San Francisco.
Oh, God.
It's Subproject 42. It's almost exactly the same as New York, but this time they're adding six.
Of course. Quote,
at Gottlieb's direction, White assembled a group of sex workers whose job would be to bring in clients to the pad and dose them with LSD while he watched and recorded their reactions. They put microphones and tape recorders everywhere, filled the apartment with sex toys and porn, and a very well-stocked bar. Quote, White kept the bar well stocked. Several of his associates said that he often watched the proceedings from next door while drinking from a pitcher of martinis and sitting on a portable toilet. Sure enough, among documents that the CIA later declassified in an expense report he filed on August 3rd, 1955, that includes this entry, one portable toilet, $25, 24 disposable bags at 15 cents each. $3.60 to $28.60. This dude is sitting on a fucking toilet watching people do LSD and fuck.
Yo, can we just be real honest right here? If he's just sitting on a toilet like that, this man doesn't have his pants on. I bet you anything he's like getting his rocks off to
this. Oh, of course he is. Of course he is.
There's no way he isn't. There's no way he wasn't.
So do you think his pants are fully around his ankles? Or do you think they're kind of like up at his knees?
Or does he just not have any on? Are they above the knee to keep his leggies warm?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it is San Francisco. I feel
like he definitely would need to get up to stretch because, like, that's a position where, like, my legs would fall asleep.
Oh, absolutely.
This is fucking insane.
So he knew people in New York City, but he didn't really knew anyone in San Francisco. So he had to turn to a military intelligence officer named Ira Ike Feldman. During a few months of, like, working undercover for White through the Narcotics Bureau, he was asked to join MKUltra. And this is when he learns about Sidney Gottlieb and LSD. At first, he was literally like, I'm not fucking doing that. I'm not drugging people. No, I won't fucking do that. But he was given
the right choice.
Yeah, he was given the whole, like, it's for your country speech. And he was in.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
So his
now, people really fell for the propaganda back
then. Oh my God, right? Be a patriot. Drug people for your country.
Imagine.
Secretly give people LSD for America. So his first assignment was to recruit the sex workers who would work as MKUltra contractors, like, not knowingly. Each time they brought a client to the safe house, she would be paid $50 to $100. And as a bonus, she'd be given a get-out-of-jail-free card with White's phone number. So if she got arrested for sex work, she'd call up White and he'd come and get her out and you know, she's not in trouble. Which, low-key, I do love. Protect sex workers at all cost.
Yeah.
And while all of this is happening, everyone is also, like, partaking in drugs. So there was, like, a direct quote where it said, no drug scared White, who had used more different sorts than almost any American then alive. He grabbed a share of whatever the CIA sent him. He always wanted to try everything himself.
Gotta taste test the product.
Which I gotta say, at least he fucking tried everything before he just drugged people with it.
Yeah. I mean, he's still a terrible fucking person.
Oh, he's still a horrible person. He's still a horrible person.
Doing to himself what he's doing to others.
Yeah, but at least he's like, you know, I'll try those first. What if it kills him? Who knows?
Let's just see what happens.
So while the sex workers and the clients had sex in the pad, White would watch through a one-way mirror, sitting on a portable toilet, sometimes with Ike Feldman there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining that.
So their whole thing was so, like, observing awkward. The way men would act with, like, various kinds of sex and drugs and combinations of the true, like, of the two, which, like, you don't need a test. Literally ask any woman who's ever had sex, do men just talk after sex and just say, you can get with them to say whatever? Absolutely. That's so easy. That's not a surprise that, like, oh wow, men talk after sex. Like, Jesus fucking Christ, you idiots. So a psychiatrist who worked with the CIA would occasionally drop by the pad, quote, is what they call it all the time. But usually no healthcare professionals were available. So if something went wrong, there's no one there to help at all.
Like if somebody started overdosing or something, they would just die.
They would just die. So Gottlieb would come and visit San Francisco, but not for business purposes, because Operation Midnight Climax gave him ready access to sex workers. So there are people recall, like, George Hunter White complaining that all Gottlieb wants him to do is get him laid. Yeah. Okay. So this is the last thing before the levity. In my opinion, this is the worst thing, and it's because all of the information that we don't have. They definitely destroyed this information first.
Okay.
In 1955, Georgetown University Hospital in Washington announced plans to construct a 6-story, 100-bed addition called Gorman Annex.
Gottlieb wanted to pay $350,000, which would then be matched by federal funds because it would be, it appeared to be a charitable donation laundered through his cutouts. So they'd be paying, you know, over $750,000, which would then give, then they would have control of 1/6 of Gorman Annex.
Okay.
So he listed 4 justifications for what would become MKUltra Subproject 35. 1, agency employees would be able to participate in the work without the university or the hospital authorities being aware of agency interest. 2, agency sponsorship of sensitive research projects will always be completely deniable. 3, full professional cover will be provided for the up to 3 biochemical employees of the chemical division. 4, human patients and volunteers for experimental use will be readily available under controlled clinical conditions.
Don't like that.
Richard Helms, his, you know, Gottlieb's unofficial boss who helped him write the proposal for this, passed the decision up to Alan Dulles. And even kind of more, this like never happens. This never happened in MKUltra. Dulles took this to President Eisenhower's special committee to review because it was
what?
Because it was so much money.
Oh my God.
The committee was like, yep, go for it. And the CIA money was forthcoming. And this was, a researcher wrote, the only time in the whole quarter century of agency behavior control activities when documents show that the CIA officials went to the White House for approval of anything.
Holy shit.
Little is known about the experiments that CIA scientists conducted at the Gorman Annex, although the agency later confirmed that terminally ill patients were among the subjects. Pressed for details later, Director of CIA Intelligence Stansfield Turner replied, there is no factual evidence of what went on. It's just missing. So it was destroyed.
That's spooky.
I went into the committee where that quote was taken from to get a little bit more details, like the transcript of that hearing, to get a little bit more details. And a senator asked Admiral Turner, do you have any indication that some experiments in the facility use terminally ill cancer patients as subjects? You do acknowledge in your statement, and it is clear from other documents, that these kind of experiments were at some point being done somewhere. My question is there any indication that cancer patients or terminally ill patients were experimented on in this wing? And Admiral Turner does say, yes, it does appear there is a connection here, sir. So, we can only imagine what was done there. When we look at the facts, we know of the horrible things that they did to children and adults around the country. And what was done at Gorman Annex was considered so much worse that it had to be destroyed immediately. So that's why that is the last one.
I can't even imagine what could be worse than we've already heard.
Exactly.
Like, I cannot fathom what it possibly could have been.
Exactly. So that's why that was the last sub-project, dangerous sub-project that I cover.
That's the college my father-in-law went to as a medical student.
I know.
Much later.
Okay. So because I wanted to end this. Oh, he would literally never. I wanted to end this with like something lighthearted quotes. So Subproject 4 was the hiring of a man named John Mulholland, who was a student of Harry Houdini and at the time America's most celebrated magician.
What? This is crazy.
And he was asked to write a book. So they hired him to kind of like teach their CIA agents like the act of like misdirection.
Sleight of hand.
And sleight of hand, basically. So, one, underlying basis for the successful performance of tricks and the background of the psychological principles by which they operate. Two, tricks with pills. Three, tricks with loose solids. Interesting description. Four, tricks with liquids. Five, tricks whereby small objects can be obtained secretly. The manual did require two further sections.
All right, so they're like, how can we fucking pickpocket people the best way possible?
Literally, yeah. Yeah, they're like, we want to pickpocket people, we want to drug them, we want to take their stuff, we want to take, you know, like, we want to be able to do sleight of hand shit. So they hired a magician who studied under Harry Houdini. And he wrote a book about it.
I really didn't think that this was where this was going to go.
No, no one did. No one saw this coming.
Oh, man.
So a copy of this book surfaced in 2007. And it was actually released called the Official CIA Manual of Trickery and Deception. And it is the only entire complete intact document that we have from MKUltra. And those are the MKUltra subprojects, y'all.
Yeah, that's batshit crazy. That's the only...
the only complete document we have.
Full document that we have.
And it's all written in, like, stage language, so that should it fall into the wrong hands, it just seems like someone who's, like, working for the circus is doing, like, a magic performance. So, like, operatives are called, like, performers and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's online. I'm ordering it. I'm fucking ordering it.
I need to read that.
Yeah,
I need
to read it. I'm absolutely ordering this. And one thing that I didn't... it's not like a specific sub-project, but we kind of touched on it a little bit. The government is 100% responsible for the birth of the LSD subculture. They are the ones who brought LSD to America. And they're the ones who gave it to the people who then spread it to the rest of the world. So, the author of The One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, he was involved in some of the university MKUltra experiments.
What?
The lyricist of The Grateful Dead, he was involved in the voluntary experiments. And he's the one who specifically said that the government-grade LSD is the best shit he's ever had.
Oh my god.
Like, the lyrics, yeah. So,
I shouldn't be surprised.
These heroes of the LSD subculture were given LSD from the fucking government, and it created a counterculture of freedom, exploring your consciousness. You know, everything that the government was trying to fight, they literally gave birth to by drugging people.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Incredible. I mean,
yeah.
Wow. Holy cow, Katie. And we still have another episode on this subject.
And we still have another episode on this subject. So, you know, at this point, no one knows about this. No one knows what's going on. Multiple people have died in these experiments. Frank Olson, you know, some inmates. I don't know if I talked about... wait a second. I didn't talk about the professional tennis player that his psychiatrist... did I talk about that? There's a tennis player?
No, but I know that you have told me about that, and I can't remember if it was in the last episode or not.
Right?
But why don't you just tell it really quickly?
So yeah, there's a tennis player who went to go... who, like, checked himself into a hospital... oh, that was in the last one. That was an artichoke who checked himself into a hospital for his divorce and was shot up with mescaline.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely insane.
Yeah. Unhinged. So, you know, no one really knows about it. People have died.
So, like, are you going to tell us next episode about how people, like, find out about it? Or... yes.
Yeah. Okay, so, next we're going to talk about how people find out about it. We're going to talk about some of the joint hearings. And we're going to talk about how every single person involved in MKUltra walked free.
Because, of course.
Yes. Which I did mention in the last episode and is important to keep in mind now. No one got in trouble for this. And we'll talk about how that happened.
Wow, 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 wow.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, holy shit. Wow. Thank you, Katie.
Yeah. This was a this was a longer episode than I anticipated it being, and it could have been longer, honestly. Everyone, before we end this episode and get into our thank yous, I cannot stress enough that if you have the emotional and mental capacity to either listen to Stephen Kinzer's book, Poisoner in Chief, on audiobook or purchase it to read it, it is out of control. There's so many more details that I didn't even include that kind of set the scene. I highly recommend it. I think at this point I've actually read it 3 times, just like securing information and audiobook and stuff. I highly recommend.
Wow. All right. Thank you, Katie.
Yes. And thank you all for listening. Go watch some Bob's Burgers.
Yep.
Relax.
Go do something happy.
Yeah.
Something positive.
Sit in the sun and... or something.
Yeah. Go touch some grass.
Touch some grass, exactly.
We'll see you next week.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thank you for listening.